in futile defense as the mask drew back its spike to jab at his face. Desperate, Kadka moved her hands over the eye slits on its mask and pulled back hard. Carver and Endo had talked about automatons using their lenses to see, like eyes. She hoped that was true. The blow missed by a sliver as Failure jerked his head aside. The mask didn't strike again. Instead, reached back to ball its fist in Kadka's shirt and tear her free. She grabbed at it, trying to find purchase, and gripped its black hood. It wasn't enough. The mask hurled her against the wall, and she struck hard, knocking the breath from her lungs. But the hood tore away, too, still clutched in her fist. Suddenly, the golem's head was exposed, a smooth brass oval with a single seam outlining a square hatch at the back. A hatch like Endo's crawlers, where the scrolls that governed their actions were held. The one she'd seen had gone inactive when those scrolls were removed. If she could just get the mask to stay still long enough to jam one of her knives in that seam, she was sure she could pry it open. From halfway down the hall, Indri uttered a spell and grabbed the mask's raised arm in a lariat of astral force just before it stabbed down at Failure Audlian's head once more. Salus grabbed his son by the arm, shoved Dahlia ahead, and the three of them were running once more, heading for the far end of the hall where another stairway led back down to the first floor. The mask yanked against Indri's restraint, breaking free to aim one last thrust at the back of Failure's head as he passed out of reach. It came close enough to stir the young elf's hair, but didn't quite find purchase. Always the head. That was something else Carver had called out before. If it was a symbol for their lack of magic, the victim should have been stabbed through the heart, he'd said. But what if it wasn't a symbol? Maybe an automated assassin couldn't judge for itself whether someone was dead or just unconscious. Maybe its instructions needed to be specific enough to make certain. The heart was unreliable, easily missed, but a spike through the brain. The mask pursued its fleeing victim down the hall. Indri caught up with Kadka, pulled her to her feet.
Are you hurt?
Kadka ignored the question.
You see how mask always goes for head? See spike there? Maybe it knows victim is dead. Job is done.
You have an idea? I'd be glad for one of those right now.
Indri started after the mask once more. Kadka ran alongside her, pointing with her knife toward the back of the mask's head as they chased it down the hall.
See seam there? Need to get that open to stop it. Just need distraction.
Understanding came to Indri's eyes, and she nodded emphatically.
I can make that happen. Be ready.
She spoke the words of a spell, and a silver-blue cord wrapped around the golem's waist, slowing it down. The Audlians made the stairs at the end of the hall, moved quickly out of sight as they descended. Indri shouted after them,
"Find some place to hide!"
The spell didn't hold long. Each time the mask broke free faster as Indri's endurance ebbed, but it was enough for Kadka and Indri to close the distance. They were only a few yards behind when they reached the stairs themselves. This stairway was clearly for the servants and guards, narrower and less impressive than the ones in the foyer. They switched direction at a landing halfway down. As they rounded that corner just behind the mask, Indri quietly started to mutter the words of a spell. Below them, Failure Audlian ran by the bottom of the stairway, apparently alone. The mask leapt down the last 10 steps in a single bound, raising its spike. Kadka poured on the speed and threw herself after, exiting the stairway into a small servants' hall that led to the kitchen on her left. To her right, a door onto the grounds had been left open. Failure stumbled away in terror, and then his back was against the wall. The mask raised its spike and struck. The spike tore through Failure's face, pulping skin and crunching bone. Desperately, Kadka hurled herself onto the mask's back one last time, wrapped one arm around its neck. The mask ignored her, didn't resist at all. Its primary goal was to kill its target. Nothing else mattered. It drove the spike through Failure's head until she heard it strike the wall behind. Kadka jammed her knife into the seam at the back of the mask's head and put all her strength against the hilt. The hatch wrenched open, revealing 3 tightly coiled scrolls of spellwork. She jammed her fist into the hole and tore one free from its copper clasps. Beneath her, The golem ceased moving. The faint silver-blue glow of its eyes died, and it dropped heavily to its knees. Khadka leapt free as it collapsed to the floor with a massive crash. It was over. They'd done it. They'd broken the mask. Just not the way she'd imagined. She looked to the limp body of Faelir Audlian, pinned against the wall on a bloody spike. The body shimmered, colors fading into silver. Faelir vanished as the illusion blinked out, leaving only the crown spike staked into crumbling plaster. On the landing above, the sound of Indri's muttered spell ceased, and she descended the rest of the way to join Khadka.
"How's that for a distraction?" she said.
Khadka turned to her with a wide, triumphant grin.
"Does the job!"
She crumpled the glyph-covered scroll in her fist and let it fall atop the mask's massive, motionless frame.
"Is it over?"
Dalia Audlian's voice, from outside.
"Not until Endostook is locked up,"
Indri answered.
"But you're out of danger."
She and Khadka left the manor through the open door to the grounds. Dalia, Salus, and Faelir huddled together against the wall just outside the door, alive and well. Beyond them, Khadka could see the nighttime lights of the city spread out below the hill where the manor sat, not as impressive as the view from the top of an airship, but still decent. Dalia Audlian stood, quickly recovering her dignified bearing.
"Endostook? Is that who was behind this? That is hard to imagine."
"It's true," Khadka said. "Who else builds thing like that?"
She pointed through the door at the great sprawl of the mask. Dalia nodded slowly as she considered that.
"An automaton that advanced. I don't know how you two stopped it. We are in your debt. Anything in my power?"
A massive, roaring explosion shattered the air, swallowing her voice.
"Get down!"
Indri shouted, and threw herself in front of the Audlians. Dalia ducked her head and pressed herself back against the wall as great pillars of silver fire gouted into the air across the darkened city below. The light burned painfully bright against Khadka's sensitive night vision even from so far away, but still she leapt to join Indri, ready to shield the Audlians with her body. But there was nothing to shield them from. The fires were far away, 6 points of searing silver spread over the city. There was nothing to do but watch them burn. And as the pillars of silver flame reached their full height, a ghostly image of the Mage Emperor's crowned staff appeared in the sky above each spot, glowing silver blue against the night sky.
"What in the Astra?"
Indri breathed, looking up at the sigils in horror.
"What is this?"
Khadka didn't have an answer for that, but she was a good judge of distance and direction. It didn't take her long to identify the locations. One at Audlian's Crossing, where protesters gathered before the Brass Citadel, two each in the poorer districts of Porthaven and Greenstone, and one more. Not terribly far away, a crowned staff floated in the air above Stookton. A fist of dread closed around Khadka's heart.
"Don't know what it is,"
said Khadka, and pointed at the sigil over Stookton, silver flames burning hungrily below.
"But that one is Stookhouse, where Carver went."
Chapter 24 Bluecaps had already surrounded the Stook's townhouse by the time Tane got there. 2 dozen men and women in blue uniforms and caps had erected a perimeter of glyph-etched brass pylons topped by copper spheres. A barrier of silver-blue energy spanned the gaps between them, shimmering against the dark and blocking anyone without the proper badge from going in or out.
"They should already be there,"
Indri's voice in his head. She'd sent for backup before they'd parted. Her tone was purposefully brisk, no indication of the fact that they'd kissed less than a quarter hour before.
"It's not far from the yard."
"They are," Tane sent back. "Already have their pylons set."
"Good. Don't even think about going in after Endo without a good dozen of them in front of you."
"I heard you the first 5 times. I'll be good."
"You'd better be. I expect to see you again when this is done. I have to go now. We're almost at the Audlian estate. Good luck, Tane."
The pressure died in his ears, and she was gone, very likely to face down the mask. He tried not to think too hard about all the ways that could go badly. He couldn't afford to be distracted just now. As he approached the townhouse, Dane reached back to tuck his vest over the pistol sitting in the back of his waistband. Indri had given it to him, but he wasn't certain the other Blue Caps would approve. He didn't much like carrying it, but he had a feeling he was going to need every edge he could get before the night was over. A blue-clad Ugrin woman waved him down as he drew near.
"Mr. Carver,"
she said, in a lovely, sonorous voice.
"I'm Inspector Vatha. Inspector Lovile said you'd be coming."
She was large enough that she had to bend at the knee to hand him a brass badge.
"This will let you through the perimeter, if need be. I'm glad you're here. Things have become complicated."
"How so?" Dane asked, pinning the badge to his waistcoat. "Is Endo inside?"
"He is," said Inspector Vatha. "Our divinations confirm two astral signatures in there, Mr. Stook himself and his mother. The problem is, he won't let anyone through the wards, and he's threatening to harm the senator if we try. I've been trying to negotiate, but he's not responding. And astrally disassembling the house wards could take hours."
Dane raised an eyebrow. "And you think I can do something to help?"
"I hope so,"
Vatha said.
"Just before you arrived, Mr. Stook told me that he would speak to you, and only you. I don't know what changed, but he seemed to know you'd be here. And from what Inspector Lovile says, I gather you have some insight into his mindset that I don't. I'd like you to convince him to let some of us go in with you. If we can get close, we can take him down."
Dane shook his head. "Won't work. He'll never agree to it." If Endo wanted him inside, it was for one reason, to settle a very old score. He wouldn't let the Blue Caps get in the way. "But you're right. Someone has to get in there, and he'll let me in if I go alone." Which was exactly what he'd promised Indri he wouldn't do. But a senator's life was at stake now. And she knew it had to go this way. She wouldn't have been so worried about it otherwise.
"I can't let you do that, Mr. Carver. It's against protocol, and Chief Darren
isn't here. Look, Inspector Lovile was put in charge of this case by the Lady Protector, right? And she brought me on board. I'm not a civilian, I'm a professional consultant, and I know how to deal with Endo." That was a lie, but he didn't think the inspector would be checking for those just now. "Right now, the important thing is getting Senator Stook out of there. If I go in, I might be able to get those wards down for you, if nothing else. Let me help." Vatha hesitated for a moment, and then nodded her head.
"I shouldn't, but Inspector Lovile did say we should defer to your knowledge of the situation."
She turned to the Blue Caps holding the perimeter and raised her voice.
"Mr. Carver is going in. Let him through."
The constables gave her quizzical looks, but stood aside without argument. The badge Vatha had given him allowed Tane through the perimeter shield, with a hair-raising tingle like passing through a ward. On the inside of the shield, a broad half-circle of empty space surrounded the Stooks' townhouse. It felt isolated, as if he'd stepped out of phase with the rest of the world. He could still see and hear the Blue Caps on the other side, but they were somehow distant now, despite their closeness. He was on his own. He approached the door, but before he could do anything to signal his presence, he felt the pressure of ascending build in his ears.
"Dane, you are full of surprises, aren't you? When my mask saw your friends arrive at the Audlian estate, I knew you'd be along soon."
"Then you must also know we've told everyone the truth," Dane sent back through the open astral channel. "This is over, Endo. Indri and Kadka are going to stop the mask, and you can't hole up in there forever."
"We'll see, won't we? In the meantime, why don't you come in and have a friendly chat? After all, we've become so close."
The door swung inward. Endo said nothing more, but the pressure in Tane's ears remained. The channel was still open. Tane wasn't keen on passing into the entry hall. He'd been ambushed by crawlers there once already. But he took a breath and stepped across the threshold. Death by automaton just inside the door was too impersonal. Endo wasn't going to do anything to him until they were face to face. As soon as he was inside, the outer door closed behind him, and the inner one opened into the house proper.
"You haven't seen my workshop, have you?"
Endo's voice sounded in his head.
"I think you'll like it. considering our shared interest in the workings of magecraft. End of the hall to your right, please.
Tane considered stalling, taking the time to search for wherever the Stooks kept their central warding artifacts, but really he'd only told Vatha he'd try so that she'd let him in. The truth was, Endo was smart enough to have that room thoroughly secured. Instead, he turned right, just as he'd been told. A door waited for him at the end of a short hall, slightly ajar. Taking a long, shaky breath, Tane brushed his fingers over the watch case in his pocket, and then reached back to grasp Indri's pistol. Keeping his hand hidden behind him, he pushed the door open and stepped into a workshop lined with long tables and littered with artifice debris. Brass and copper and gold and silver and gems of all kinds. Endo was waiting inside, his chair facing the door. The earnest little gnome Tane was familiar with had disappeared. His face was hard, and his eyes were cold. On the floor beside him, Umbla Stook lay prone and bound, cyclopean brass spider crawlers clasping her wrists and ankles with their segmented legs. One perched on her chest, holding a sharp-pronged claw at her throat. By the terror in her eyes, it was more the claw keeping her silent than a gag in her mouth. "Let her go, Endo," Tane said. At the sight of him, Umbla Stook's eyes widened and a muffled shout started under her gag.
"Quiet, mother,"
Endo said, and his crawler pressed its claw slightly harder against her neck. She fell silent. "You can't win here, Endo," said Tane, moving closer. "This will go easier on you if you cooperate." Endo smiled without any real mirth.
"Now, Tane, you can't really have thought I would believe that. After what I've done, there is no easy sentence. No, I think I'll wait this out."
"That's about what I thought you'd say." In a fluid motion, Tane drew Indri's pistol and aimed it at Endo's chest. "So let's define easy as still alive. Make a move I don't like or utter a word of the lingua, and I can take that option away." Which was assuming Endo hadn't already cast a shield or any other active magic that would turn an Ancrist ball aside. He's an artificer more than a combat mage. If he was already focusing on a spell, he'd show it, and he can't cast faster than a pistol shot.
"I don't think you will," said Endo. "If you'll permit me to show you something without pulling the trigger."
He raised a hand from his lap. Very slowly. In it, he held a small brass artifact. His thumb rested on a copper plate etched with glowing glyphs.
"The instant this little device ceases to sense my astral signature, my crawler will cut Mother's throat. And if you think your aim sound enough to hit the crawler, consider that you'll have wasted your only shot. What will be left to stop me casting a spell?"
Tane kept the pistol steady. "First your brother, and now your mother. Why? What is it you want? You can't think you'll still get it." Something felt wrong, and that sending pressure was still in his ears. It was hard not to try to shake his head clear, though he knew it wouldn't help. Endo was still keeping the astral channel open, which meant he could send a burst of pain or a sudden image at any moment. But for some reason, he hadn't yet. Endo laughed bitterly.
"My dear brother, do you have any idea what it was like to see her?"
He jabbed a finger at his mother there.
"Treat him as the favorite, the heir apparent? To pretend to be the meek little brother when I could do things he couldn't dream of? To watch them, and everyone else, look down with pity at the poor half-gnome with no legs, when magic gave me back far more than I ever lost? And then to learn that Ulnav was working with the Silver Dawn for non-magical rites, but it was a magicless fool who took my legs from me?"
Tane edged slowly to one side, hoping Endo was agitated enough not to notice. He had to get closer to Umbla Stook if he was going to do something about that crawler. "I need to keep him talking, keep him distracted. It was a mage who made the error on those spells, Endo. The accident wasn't my father's fault. If he'd been allowed to have the magical education..."
"But he didn't,"
Endo shouted.
"It should have been a mage checking those spells. A mage might have caught the mistake. If we weren't so concerned with making the non-magical feel useful, your father would have had nothing to do with such a delicate artifact. And now his son has the gall to pretend at magecraft, making people like him believe they might do the same."
He took a breath, gathered his composure.
"You would try to teach the blind to see, but they will never have true vision. The Magicless look at me, and all they see is that I cannot walk upon the ground like they do. They never stop to think that if I needed to, I could fly.
So this is all still about the accident when you get down to it, said Tane. He almost felt like he could understand. The same experience had shaped them both, even if Endo had gone too far. I spent a long time obsessing over it, too. I ruined almost everything good in my life dwelling on the past. I still regret it. That was hard to face even now. So much time lost with Endri and Alea. He'd never even had the chance to apologize to her. You have such a brilliant mind, and you're wasting it trying to change something that's already happened.
I couldn't expect you to understand,
Endo said.
You have surprised me, I will admit, but still you have no magic of your own. There is a natural order to things, and we have tried to subvert it in the Protectorate for too long. It is time things were put right.
Tane edged further toward the Senator as Endo spoke, and it was only then that he noticed something strange. Endo's shadow was wrong. It had looked right from the front, but from this angle it appeared to be cast by a light that wasn't there. And that sending pressure was still strong in his ears. Spellfire, Tane cursed, and swung his pistol toward the crawler at Umbla Stook's throat. He was close enough now that it was an easy shot. A silver flash, and the little brass automaton backflipped through the air and landed on the ground under one of Endo's work tables, several legs broken beneath it.
Ah, said Endo. I suppose the game is up.
He laughed.
Did you really think I would sit here waiting for you just to explain my motivations in elaborate detail? I had my knights put a contingency plan into motion as soon as I sent the mask for you and Inspector Lovial. I'm afraid you've wasted quite a bit of time, Tane, and you don't have much of that left.
His image shimmered into silver and then dissolved completely, leaving behind an empty chair. He'd never been there at all. He'd been sending an illusion from the moment Tane had entered. But the chair wasn't actually entirely empty. A four-sided pyramid of brass about the size of Tane's head sat upon the seat, with a round clock face set into the side. The hands glowed silver blue. Astral images cast on clouded glass, and they were counting down. Only some 2 minutes remained. Beside that sat a small copper-lined mimic vial. That's why the diviner sensed him inside. He's been buying time to get away, and I fell for it. Though the image had gone, Endo's voice was still there.
I'd hoped to announce my claim to the throne more elegantly, but it seems your friends have disabled my mask. Senseless destruction will have to do. Goodbye, Tane.
At last, the sending pressure abated. There was no time to be relieved that Indri and Kadka had dealt with the mask. Whatever that pyramid-shaped artifact was, it wasn't good, and there wasn't long left on the clock. Tane rushed to Umbla Stook's side, battered the crawlers from her wrists and ankles with the butt of Endri's pistol. As he freed her arms and legs, she managed to spit the gag from her mouth. She was staring, terrified, at the artifact in Endo's chair.
You have to stop it!
No time, said Tane. We need to get out of here. She shook her head.
You don't understand. He set it to go off if we try to leave, and there are more around the city, set to activate when this one does.
More of what? What is it?
Spellfire,
she said, and at first he thought she was just swearing, but then...
It's a spellfire detonation! It's going to burn us alive!
Tane's heart froze in his chest. He rose convulsively, spun on his heel to face the device. A minute and a half left. He lunged for Endo's chair and the detonation artifact. The side of the pyramid opposite the clock was hinged at the bottom, latched closed with a copper press plate. He recognized the design. It would be astrally sealed, unbreakable unless it sensed the signature it was set for. Luckily, Endo had left him just what he needed. Tane snatched up the mimic vial from the seat of the chair and a pair of brass tongs sitting on the nearby work table. Clutching the vial and the tongs to insulate his own astral signature, he touched the mimic vial to the latch and pressed inward. The side of the pyramid fell open. Tane knelt to examine the interior workings. Inside, the faces were lined with copper, and glyphs in the lingua were etched over every inch from top to bottom. A sapphire array was mounted at the back, held in copper clasps. Just above that was the clock face, The silver-blue hands oriented themselves to the perspective of the viewer, so it was perfectly readable from the inside as well as out, and it showed just over a minute left. Hastily, he scanned the glyphs. It was a Spellfire detonation. He'd hoped the senator had gotten it wrong somehow. When the time ran out, the artifact would release a pillar of Spellfire large enough to consume the house and everything else within the prescribed area, and there was no restriction to what it would burn. Only the plain circle glyph for all things. There were more of them, too, just as Senator Stook had said. Endo must have been pressed for time, because the spellcraft here was set as a template for a number of other detonations. The others would have much simpler glyphs, linking back to these ones. Faster to make a primary artifact and base the rest on it than to create an Etch-5 in a few hours. If Tain hadn't been less than a minute away from death by spellfire, it would have been satisfying to know he'd at least forced Endo to scramble. But if I can stop this one, I stop the others, too. Which was easier said than done. Endo had included tamper-proofing and redundancies everywhere. Scratching out any of the glyphs would set it off, or trying to remove the gems powering it. There wasn't much he could do except speed up his own incineration, which didn't really need speeding up. Only 30 seconds left.
Do something!
Umbla Stook yelled from over his shoulder.
There's no time!
There's nothing I can do. If I try to change anything, it kills us both! Except maybe that wasn't quite true. There was nothing to stop him from adding to the glyphs, as long as he didn't override anything. Endo had used up all the available space, so there was no room for entirely new glyphs, but... He glanced at the clock face. Just under 20 seconds. He might still make it, if he was fast. Tain whirled, frantically searched the work table, tossed through piles of scattered parts. Where is it? He was sure he'd seen... There it was. A copper-tipped engraving wand, half hidden under a dirty rag. He grabbed it, pressed the activation glyph on the grip, and knelt before the pyramid. It was only then that he remembered Indri's sending locket. He could have at least said goodbye to her. Told her to thank Kadka for him, maybe even come up with some convincingly profound last words. 5 seconds. No time for farewells. Astra, let this work. Let me see them again. As the clock ticked toward zero, he etched a single line. The room exploded into silver flame.
Tain?
Tain coughed as he came back to consciousness, and he felt something come out, a fine grit that lined the inside of his mouth and lungs. His entire body ached. He blinked open his eyes, looked up to see Indri and Kadka kneeling beside him. And looming large in the night sky directly above their heads, a towering image of the Mage Emperor's crowned staff. Kadka clapped him on the shoulder, and he winced from the force of it.
Carver! When we saw fire, I thought, it's good to see you alive.
She offered an arm, helped him to his feet. Tain's leg nearly buckled under him, and he leaned against her for support.
What?
He started coughing again, and gray dust issued from his mouth. It looked like ash. Actually, now that he looked, he was covered in it, from head to toe. A huge, ash-filled hole that had once been the basement was all that remained of the Stook townhouse. And the homes on either side were gone as well. Everything below the crowned staff in the sky had been burned to nothing. All that remained was ash covering melted metal and stone.
What happened?
Spellfire detonations, said Indri. 6 of them, across the city.
She pointed up at the Mage Emperor's sigil.
And one of those above every one.
How many dead? Tain asked, dreading the answer.
About 20 counted so far, mostly from the bridge at Audlian's Crossing, said Indri. But it could have been much worse. The spellfire must have been set to only burn inanimate matter. It incinerated buildings in an instant, and the bridge, but it didn't touch a living soul. What deaths and injuries we have are from when the bridge and floors gave way.
Explains why I hurt so much. I must have fallen into the basement when the floor burned up.
That's the most common story, said Indri. Endo must have been making a point, but he could have killed so many more people. I don't see why—
Tain shook his head. It wasn't him. He was going to burn everything. The only thing I could do was change the glyph on the template, a half circle on the downward side. Indri's eyes widened,
All things not sentient. By the Astratane, you saved a lot of lives.
I was mostly trying to save my own, he said, and coughed up another cloud of ash. What about the Senator?
She's alive, but badly hurt in the fall, said Indri. We've already sent her to the mage surgeons.
Tane was about to ask more when a sudden pressure filled his ears. He knew who it would be even before the voice came.
You are a hard man to kill, it seems,
Endo said mildly in a voice only Tane could hear. It sounded hollow, as if sent from a great distance.
And more resourceful than I anticipated once again. But still, my sigil looks grand in the sky, doesn't it? It should have been above the Audlian estate, but I think my point has been made.
Kadka noticed something was wrong instantly.
Carver, what is it?
Endo, he said. Along the open astral channel, he sent back, Every blue cap and mage blade in the Protectorate will be looking for you. You can't escape. Not after this.
I already have. But we will meet again, Tane Carver. I promise you that.
And then the pressure died. The sending was done.
What is he saying?
Indri demanded.
Keep him talking. I might be able to trace him through the Astra.
And Tane could only shake his head. We're too late. I think he's gone. Chapter 25
This is a disaster, Chief Durin shouted, pounding a fist on his desk. Dozens dead and injured, and no sign of the criminal responsible for it. Any evidence we might have found in the Stooks townhouse is burned to ash. What do you have for me, Inspector Lovial?
Tane stood with Kadka and Indri in the chief's office at Stookton Yard. After a long night trying to track down Endo, they'd been summoned to report in the early hours of the morning. He leaned against Kadka. He'd twisted his ankle badly when the floor of the Stook house had been incinerated under his feet, and it was still painful to stand on his own.
Very little.
Indri admitted.
We've closed the ports and rail stations, but I suspect Endo is already out of our reach. A small Stook vessel left the harbor earlier tonight, not long after Tane and I were taken captive by the Mask. He was gone before we even knew who we were looking for.
Durin's face was growing redder by the moment.
And you'll have to answer for that. We might have apprehended him if you'd just brought this to me instead of going off on your own with these two—
Kadka interrupted him with a loud bark of laughter.
His joke, yes? We all pretend you would listen to us when we tell you truth?
I should have you thrown in a cell for interfering in this investigation,
Durin exploded. Of course you should, said Tane, because then you can blame us for everything and you come out clean, right?
No.
Indri rested her fists against the desk and leaned forward to look Durin in the eye.
Because I won't stay quiet if he tries, and he knows that the people won't stand for it if they hear the famous magebreakers were jailed unjustly. You were never going to listen to anything Tane brought you, Durin. We did what we had to do.
You are insubordinate, Inspector,
Durin spluttered, flushed all the way up to his thinning red hair.
There will be consequences.
Fine, said Indri. I'm done trying to work around you. I joined the constabulary to help people, and if you won't let me do that, maybe I'm better off elsewhere.
Durin looked like he might explode, but as he opened his mouth, the door swung inward, and another voice cut him off.
I think not.
Lady Abena strode into the office, a slender elven mage blade at her side. All eyes went to her.
Your ladyship, I thought you were on the continent, said Indri. I was. When I received your messages, I cut my trip short. The Hesliar's top speed is really very impressive.
Lady Abena approached Durin's desk.
I understand that emotions are high in the wake of such a terrible tragedy, Andas. But I think Inspector Lovial is to be commended for her part in saving Faelor Audlian and stopping the Mask. She is not responsible for the actions of Endo Stook, and because of her and her friends, we at least know who our enemy is. I'm sure you wouldn't argue that fact.
Of course not, your ladyship,
Durin said, struggling to hold back a scowl.
In fact, said Lady Abena, recent events have made me consider appointing an official liaison between the constabulary and my own office, with a direct channel to me at all times. I believe Inspector Lovial would be the ideal candidate, if she will accept the position.
She turned to Indri with a raised eyebrow. Tane couldn't help but smile. It was a clever move.
Durin's position might be unassailable due to his political connections, but he couldn't touch Indri while she was liaison to the Lady Protector.
"It would be an honor, Lady Abena,"
Indri said. Tane wasn't sure how she kept a straight face. If it had been him, he'd have been full-on smirking at the Chief Constable. Durin opened and closed his mouth a few times, and then, "Your Ladyship, I'm not certain..."
"That you can afford to spare her?"
Lady Abena finished for him.
"Oh, I won't take her away from her duties. But when particularly important cases arise, she will oversee them and report to me."
Durin deflated visibly. "Of course, Your Ladyship."
"Now, I think you'll agree we three have much to discuss concerning Mr. Stook."
Lady Abena smiled at Tane and Katka.
"Once again, Mr. Carver, Miss Katka, the Protectorate thanks you for your diligent service. I'm certain we will speak more later, but for now, I hope you'll excuse us."
Tane nodded. "Come on, Katka. I'm sure Chief Durin is eager to work out the details of this new arrangement." Katka didn't bother to hide her laughter as she led him out. Katka walked Carver toward the exit, helping him keep himself upright. She chuckled to herself as they entered the waiting room at the front of the yard, still picturing the indignant look on Chief Durin's face when they'd left his office.
"Katka, Mr. Carver."
Iskar raised a hand, and then stood from his chair and crossed the room to meet them.
"Iskar?"
Katka cocked her head. She hadn't expected to see him. Not that she was complaining. He was as pretty as ever, silver scales gleaming in the building's mage light.
"Why are you here?"
"The constables had questions after they secured the storehouse," he said. "And afterward, I wanted to make sure you had both come out unscathed."
"You are still there when constables come? Thought you would leave it for others. Is hiding done, then?"
Iskar nodded, a glimmer of passion in his blue eyes.
"Most of the victims tonight were of the Silver Dawn, or non-magicals come to fight for their rights. It's clear who the targets were. If our enemies are willing to be so brazen, I don't think I can hide any longer."
He gave Katka a meaningful look.
"And perhaps I learned something of a lesson in bravery tonight."
Katka smiled.
"Was nothing."
She gestured to Carver, still leaning against her.
"He gets into trouble. I save him. Happens more than you think."
Carver laughed. "I wish that wasn't so true."
"Well, I am very glad she did," Iskar said solemnly. "I'm told it was only thanks to your quick thinking that Moore didn't die. Thank you, Mr. Carver."
"I was just trying not to burn to death," Carver said, "but you're welcome." He offered his hand. "I should have realized this earlier, but any friend of Katka's is someone I trust." Iskar returned the handshake firmly.
"I feel much the same."
"Mind you," said Carver, "I'd still like to ask you about what you did to those wards on the storehouse. I didn't think that was possible, and I'm a bit of an enthusiast where getting around spells is concerned."
"Leave him, Carver,"
Katka scolded.
"Is for him to say or not say."
She was more than a little bit curious herself. It was Dragonfire they were talking about, but people were entitled to their secrets. Iskar's tail swished nervously against the ground.
"I take no offense, but perhaps another time, Mr. Carver. You understand, I must see to my people after everything that's happened."
She didn't have to be Carver to read in his body language that he was uncomfortable with the topic. There was something there he didn't want to talk about.
"He's fine,"
said Katka, before Carver could embarrass anyone any further.
"Go, if you need."
"Yes, I suppose I should."
Iskar hesitated, gave her a long look.
"Katka, I do hope that, even if you don't choose to speak for the Silver Dawn, I would very much like to see you."
"Don't need so much talk."
Katka reached behind Iskar's neck with the arm that wasn't supporting Carver and kissed him solidly on the snout. Iskar's eyes widened, and then his hand found her waist, and he was returning the kiss. Carver squirmed away with a groan.
"Come on, don't make me part of it."
Katka snorted a laugh through her nose and drew back for air.
"You could learn something. Saw you kiss Indri."
She pointedly wrapped her now free arm around Iskar and pulled him tight against her, enjoying the firmness of his bare silver chest, running her fingers down the ridges on his back.
One last time, she pressed her mouth against his. And then she pulled away. Best not to let it go on for too long. He'd been living underground for a long time, after all, and she didn't want to overwhelm him all at once. Or maybe it was too late for that. Iskar was staring at her with wide blue eyes, a dumbstruck half-smile showing teeth at the corners of his snout. He opened his mouth, apparently came up with nothing, and closed it again.
"See you soon, Dragon Man,"
Gadka said, and then offered her arm to Carver and led him away from the speechless kobold. She was still grinning as they left the building. Chapter 26 2 days later, Lady Abenna came to the office with Indri and an escort of mage blades.
"Come in," Tane said, ushering them through the door. "We don't have much in the way of seating. You can have my chair, your ladyship, behind the desk."
He flushed when he caught Indri's eye and looked away. They'd been in contact via sending, but he hadn't seen her in person since the day Endo had escaped. She'd been busy with her new duties. And they still hadn't talked about the kiss.
"Thank you, Mr. Carver," said Lady Abenna, stepping into the office.
She waved away the first mage blade to try to follow her in.
"Stand guard outside. I'm sure the wards on this room are sufficiently secure."
"Updated for the possibility of automatons," confirmed Tane. "I know you asked Chancellor Greyman for the university's help in fixing the city's wards. She brought me on to consult yesterday. It's complicated if we still want to allow other artifacts, but I think I have it figured."
"Excellent," said Lady Abenna. "I had a feeling you would find your way into the process."
She seated herself in the chair behind his desk and nodded to Katka, who was leaning back in her usual seat with her feet up. Katka grinned her welcome and then swiveled her head toward Indri.
"New job goes well? Make Darren's face redder every day?"
"Most days,"
Indri said, and moved to stand beside the Lady Protector's chair. She had a package under one arm.
"It's been busy. We're still dealing with the damage from Endo's attack, but it's not nearly as bad as it could have been."
She looked to Tane with a slight smile.
"Thanks to you."
Tane rubbed the back of his neck. "Any sign of Endo yet?" Indri shook her head.
"We've got patrols scouring the channel and every road, but I don't think we're going to find him. He'll have gone to ground by now." "But that is not why we're here," said Lady Abenna. "Unlike the Nieris matter, there is no reason the Protectorate cannot thank you two for your service in stopping these killings. We come bearing gifts."
She nodded to Indri, who placed her package on Tane's desk.
"Firstly, a token of appreciation, commissioned under Inspector Lovial's guidance." "Open it after we leave,"
Indri said, a glint of mischief in her eye.
"And secondly,"
said Lady Abenna,
"a matter I think has been overlooked for too long."
She reached into her coat and pulled out a roll of papers, which she unbound and spread on the desk.
"Miss Katka, if you would look these over."
Katka cocked her head curiously and removed her feet from the desk to lean forward over the papers. She frowned, trying to puzzle out the oddish words, and glanced at Tane.
"Carver, is what I think..."
Tane looked over the papers, and his eyes widened. "These are citizenship papers."
"You weren't born within our borders, but few native citizens have done as much for the Protectorate as you have," said Lady Abenna. "I thought it only fair. Of course, it is your decision. You only need sign your name."
Katka didn't hesitate.
"Where is pen?"
Tane pulled open a desk drawer and handed her a pen and an inkwell. She snatched them up, signing her name in a messy scrawl at the bottom of the papers. Then she looked up at Lady Abenna.
"Is done?"
The Lady Protector gently took the pen and turned the papers toward herself. She signed across from Katka's name in a much neater hand.
"It is now. Welcome to the Protectorate, Miss Katka."
"Congratulations, Katka," said Tane, laying a hand on her shoulder.
"Is my fight now,"
Katka said softly, and though Tane didn't know what that meant, he could have sworn he saw a glint of wetness in her eye before she blinked it away.
"Thank you, Ladyship. I will not let you down."
"I don't expect you will," said Lady Abenna, "and we may need your help again soon. Mr. Stook is a brilliant man, and his recent demonstration will, unfortunately, draw those of a certain mindset to the Knights of the Emperor. He has, it seems, managed to take with him a large portion of the Stook fortune, and his house has trade connections all across the continent. Even as a fugitive, I suspect he will not find himself lacking for resources. You two have as much insight into the man as anyone. I hope we can rely on your assistance in dealing with him.
Tane and Khadka shared a glance and nodded their assent at the same time. You can count on us, said Tane.
I knew we could.
Lydia Benna rose to her feet.
Now we must be on our way. There is still much to do, and I'm sure Chancellor Greymond would prefer it if you kept at work on the new wards. Inspector Lovial?
They were on their way out the door when Tane finally mustered up his nerve. Wait. She turned, with a half-smile that said she knew exactly what he was going to ask.
Yes, Tane?
Maybe we could get that dinner tonight? Indri's smile broke full across her face.
I think we've waited long enough. I'll see you tonight.
She nodded to the package still waiting on the desk.
And don't forget to open that.
Again, that spark of amusement in her eyes. Then she was gone, and the door swung closed behind her. Khadka grinned toothily at him.
Takes you long enough to ask.
Shut up, said Tane, but he couldn't stop smiling.
Wipe off funny look and open present,
Khadka said, tapping the package.
I want to see it.
Tane picked the package up, hefted it in his hand. It was heavy, probably metal, flat and rectangular in shape. He tore off the wrapping to find an engraved brass plaque, held it up to read, and groaned.
What? What is it?
Khadka stood and craned her neck over, trying to get a look. Reluctantly, Tane put it down on the desk for her to see. I wonder if I can give it back. Khadka cackled loudly as she read it.
Have to use. Is gift from Lady Protector. No choice now.
The plaque was clearly intended to replace the unfinished one on the office door. It was lovely work, engraved at the center with Audlin's rearing griffin and inscribed underneath with the words, In honor of courageous service to the Protectorate. Which wasn't the part that bothered him. Now he knew what Indri had found so amusing. The name inscribed above the griffin. A name he was apparently stuck with. Magebreakers Consulting and Investigation. This concludes The Emperor's Mask by Ben S. Dobson. Narrated by Travis Baldry. Copyright 2017 by Ben S. Dobson. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Ben S. Dobson, care of Hirschman Rights Management, LLC, and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright there too. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.